Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
You're listening to The Exchange. Here's today's show.
Scott, thank you, and welcome to The Exchange. I'm Deirdre Bosa, in for Kelly Evans, and here is what ahead today. Stocks, they are under pressure as yields, oil, and gold hit multi-month highs. We have the action, the story, and the trades to make against this backdrop. Plus, the Fed's Mary Daly getting ready to speak this hour. And this says the market is coming to terms with fewer rate cuts. One of our guests says it's about time. He is here with what he's buying from here. And Tesla down more than 5% after deliveries fell below even the lowest analyst estimate. We have all the latest with the stock now down more than 30% so far this year. But we begin with today's markets and Dom Chu with the numbers. Dom, it is tech taking it on the chin today.
It is, and it's tech. It's consumer discretionary, particularly because of that Tesla trade, as you mentioned. We're going to get into a little bit more later on. But check out the Dow Industrials down there by about 450 points, 1% drop there for the Dow was down over 500 points at one point today. The S&P 500 is at 5198.56, down 45 points, almost 1%. At the highs of the session, we were still down 39 points and down roughly 59 points at the lows. So again, a decidedly negative day. Tesla, a big part of that story, of course, as Deirdre mentioned. The NASDAQ composite, the real underperformer so far in the session, down about 1%, 177 points, 16,219 the last trade there. That consumer discretionary trade, one of the worst performers in terms of sectors today, but not all entirely Tesla. If you check out PVH Corp, it's not in the S&P 500, but this brand warehouse behind brands like Calvin Klein, Tommy Hilfiger, gave a full year forecast that came in below estimates. It's down 23%. But the ripple effects are happening to VF Corp, Tapestry, Ralph Lauren, and Deckers. All of those consumer apparel type names are in the S&P 500. You can see they're down about 4 to 5%, 7% drop for VF Corporation, watch apparel and retail on discretionary. Meanwhile, you have interest rates going to multi-month highs. You got to go all the way back to November of this past year to see levels like we're seeing right now. 4.4% was about the highs of the session. So those higher interest rates hitting sentiment as well. And by the way, higher mortgage rates are a result of some of those higher interest rates down the line. And check out what's happening with the home builders. Pulte Group, D.R. Horton, Lennar, NVR, the home builders down anywhere from 2 to 4%. Even Mohawk Industries, which makes flooring products, do-it-yourself, that kind of thing, down about 3% as well. So watch those shares. And then we'll end with the record run that we've seen in gold prices, 2298 or thereabouts, was just about the highs of the session right now. COMEX Gold up on some of those geopolitical tensions. Also some hedge funds moving things around. So, Deirdre, there's so many storylines out there right now. But those interest rates and gold, a big part of that story. I'll send things back over to you.
We're going to get to all of them, and that's where we're going to begin. What all of this means for investors and the Fed's path forward, even after the S&P saw its best start to a year since 2019, tackling stocks and bonds. We've got Max Wasserman, Senior Portfolio Manager at Miramar Capital, Peter Buchvar, Chief Investment Officer at Bleakley Financial Group, and a CNBC contributor, and on gold's rise, Imaro Casanova, Portfolio Manager of the VanEck International Investors Gold Fund. Max and Peter, let's start with you and the impact of rising yields on stocks and bonds. Peter, first, break down those rate expectations for us. Is a June cut still on the table?
It's about 50-50 this morning when I checked. It was actually under 50. I think Bostic, who's a voting member, basically said, I don't want to cut until the end of the year. Waller followed that up. But putting aside what these Fed members are saying today, what's complicating their decision-making is the rise in commodity prices and the potential bottoming in goods price inflation. I mean, the CRB index yesterday, so before today's further move in commodity prices, closed at the highest level since August 2022. Gold is making record highs every day. What self-respecting central banker is going to blow off the commodity price move and the rise in gold and say, yeah, let's just cut rates anyway? So they're actually being stuck in a corner by markets and the economy and this commodity inflation that's going to make their decision making even more difficult.
Right. A lot of the discussion among Fed members has been around the risk of cutting versus the risk of not cutting. Max, what are you looking at in terms of equities? I think you're expecting 1 to 3 this year. Where are you leaning towards today?
Well, we've been saying that we think rates are going to stay higher longer. And if the Fed is going to make the cuts, it would be towards like the fourth quarter, and maybe 50 basis points is what they should be cutting if they are. We think inflation is still very stubborn in the market, and it's much different to go from 8-9% down to 3 or 4 than to 4 to 2. So we think the Fed has to stay the course a little bit longer and get rid of the inflation. But again, it's not if they cut interest rates, it's just when. Mm-hmm. The market's just reacting because it was overly optimistic, and it has been for a while, about the Fed cutting. They thought they were going to cut in March. They had all these big cuts scheduled for June, and they were looking 5 to 6 cuts this year. Now they're starting to put it off. So we think it's just what's happening against expectations. We just think everybody's just too optimistic on the Fed.
Right. And the market started the year pricing in a lot more of these rates cuts. Peter, one of the concerns has been if the Fed cuts, we could create more of a bubble in equities if you believe that there's already one there. Where does the risk in your mind lie, cutting too soon or waiting too long?
I mean, that's a great question and the difficult needle to thread. I mean, the Fed created this monster of this addiction of financial markets on monetary policy. So it's not a coincidence that stocks bottomed in October 2022, just as the Fed was about to slow down the pace of their rate increases, because the market started to price in, okay, we're coming to the end of this rate hiking cycle. And now, of course, they got excited that not only are rates done going up, they're going to start going down, and the Fed may even start tapering QT. On the other hand, of course, the last thing that Powell wants to see is a reacceleration of inflation, because he got too cute, got too complacent, and started to cut interest rates too early. On the flip side, there's a lot of mixed signals in the U.S. economy. I mean, we have the jobs number on Friday. Well, going into that, the unemployment rate, even though it's historically low at 3.9%, that's still a two-year high. And there's still a lot of pockets of weakness, in addition to some strength within the economy, that's causing, to me, at least from my perspective, the most confused I've ever been in analyzing the economy. So it's tough to say that there's one right answer here. I think the Fed is really just sort of in this hall of mirrors trying to figure things out. And then, of course, you have the election in November, which they don't want to be seen reacting so close to that election with respect to rate cuts.
Very tricky balance at the moment. Max, when it comes to your picks for the year, if we're going to see rates higher for longer, how does that change the calculus, if it does at all? I think that one of your picks is Microsoft. It was interesting last year when we saw bond yields higher, the mega caps were actually very resilient because they've been acting more like defensives, right? They've got these massive balance sheets and moats. Do you expect that to play out the same way if we do see higher bond yields this year?
I do. You know, while Microsoft is trading at a high, you know, it's roughly around 32 times earnings, you got to look at the growth potential here. You're talking about a complete change in technology with AI, and their cloud business is growing at 26%, and about 6% of that is AI. They have the Activision side of the business, the gaming, that was up 48%, and 44% of that was due to Activision, which has 200 million monthly active subscribers. All of these are game for AI, and they're able to capitalize it and monetize it. So while it's not a cheap stock, we think it's at the infancy of where AI is going, and we think they're the number one player in the business. So we do like it. Yes, you could get a pullback from here, but we would use it as an opportunity to buy more. Again, it's one of our largest positions. We like it a lot. We've liked it for a very long time. We just think they're well positioned for the future. And we're not short-term investors. We're long-term dividend growth investors. They give you a 10% annual dividend growth. While it might not have the biggest yield, it's still consistent. They buy back stock, they invest it. So we think they're well positioned. But valuation, they're a little rich, but we're not going to be shaken out of it.
Right. And if you think that sort of the Magnificent Seven have turned into the Fab Four this year, right, you've seen more breadth in this market. And I wonder, Peter, if you think that the Fed is paying attention to what's happening in the markets and some of these frothier valuations, particularly in the tech space, hardware space with semis.
Well, what we found is that the Fed pays attention to financial conditions when they're tight and tries to loosen them. And then when they get loose, they don't necessarily focus on tightening them. And that was Powell, who was asked the specific question in his last press conference, and he sort of didn't even answer the question. I do think that they should be paying attention. The thing about tightening conditions with the financial markets, that's easy. On the other hand, if you're in commercial real estate, if you're a small business trying to get a loan, trying to buy a house or a car, mm-hmm. well, financial conditions are really tight.
Right.
And the looseness and tightness, it's really depending on who you are financial conditions tight or easy?
Mm-hmm. And we're certainly going to be talking mortgage rates on that note. Gentlemen, thank you very much, Max Wasserman and Peter Buchvar. Moving on now to gold, my next guest runs the VanEck International Investors Gold Fund. Top holdings include Agnico, Eagles Mines, Kinross Gold, and Alamos Gold. The fund returned 10% last year, up about 2% so far this year. Joining me now is VanEck's Gold and Precious Metals Portfolio Manager, Imaro Casanova. Imaro, thank you so much for being with us today. What is gold reacting to today, especially when we're talking about rate hike or hold expectations?
Hi, it's, you know, a little bit up this about 10 bucks today. So it is, as it usually does, reacting to geopolitical risk, mm-hmm. increased persistent geopolitical risk about the globe, around the globe. Clearly, the news this morning out of the embassy in Syria, saw gold climbing to almost 22.7 this morning. It's stayed up since then. And it has been geopolitical risk supporting gold lately, but not just geopolitical risk, but obviously expectations of a Fed cut, like they mentioned, not if, but when. Mm-hmm. And of course, strong support from the central banks around the world, which have been purchases of gold, providing what I think is actually a historical shift in the gold markets, potentially the emergence of central banks becoming an important driver of gold prices going forward. So that has supported gold here. We think we'll continue to support gold. And there are other drivers that have been absent in this last rally that we think could propel gold much higher from here.
Talk about the inflation side of this equation. We had PCE numbers at the end of last week showing that inflation, some improvements, but still remaining above that Fed target. How is that playing into the price right now?
I think it's I see it as sort of a win-win situation for gold. Of course, everybody's watching what the inflation numbers are saying and how that relates to what the Fed's going to do. But ultimately, inflation, sticky, persistent mm-hmm. inflation above the Fed target, I think it's very gold positive, regardless if the Fed cuts or not. Inflationary periods, periods of higher inflation, are historically very positive for gold. So like I said, I think it's win-win when it comes to inflation from here for gold.
Now, gold equities, they've lagged physical gold, but we've seen that gap really narrow in the month of March. Do you expect that to continue going forward?
Yes. You mentioned there's been, over the last couple of years, the gold equities have lagged gold significantly. We have been waiting for the reversal of that trend, and it looks like we finally got it in March. Stocks up 20% when gold was up about half of that. So that leverage, that reason why you own gold equities coming back and the equities catching up with gold, the gold equities really are historical low valuations at a time when gold is, you know, making new all-time highs every week mm-hmm. since the first day of March. So we see a lot of opportunities here for the gold equities to continue that re-rating and that catch up to to gold, which is why we strongly recommend that investors look at gold equities when they consider exposure to gold as an asset class, not just the bullion.
Imaro, I wonder how you see the China piece of this as well. We've seen improving economic data, world's second largest economy. Is this priced in?
Not probably fully. There's several angles to China when it comes to gold. China is the largest consumer of gold.
Right.
And of course, I just talked about central banks and leading that net purchaser list would be China with consecutive, month over month purchases of gold in recent years, about 22 and 23. So we expect that to continue. We don't know how price sensitive the central bank purchases are, but we do expect that trend to continue of net purchasing by central banks globally, not just China. And then there is the consumer aspect. A lot of the strengths that we're seeing in gold mm-hmm. today is not coming from the West. It's not coming from investment demand, which has actually been persistently declining over the last couple of years. It's coming from the East. Investors there, maybe because of a lack of better options, are investing in gold. A pickup in the Chinese economy, as maybe some of the indicators today are showing, it would be very positive for gold as well. Like I said, considering that the largest consumer of gold.
It would be bullish for gold. Chinese consumers would continue to buy gold. Do you think if the economy is improving, would they not have other places, other options like the stock market to hold money?
Perhaps, but I don't think it goes away too soon when it comes to investment demand. They're buying physical gold, they're buying coins, they're buying gold beans, they're buying, and young people as well, they're buying anything they can get their hands on when it comes to gold. I don't think that uncertainty and volatility goes right away so fast. And two, they're buying jewelry.
Yes.
And when the economic improves, people buy more jewelry, and that eventually provides a nice level of support for gold prices.
Yeah, interesting dynamic. Good point. Imario Casanova, thank you so much for being with us today on The Gold Trade, as she sat up about 10 bucks today. Coming up, Tesla is having its worst day in a month after posting a rare drop in deliveries. We will tell you what is behind that decline and whether investors need to worry about the road ahead. Tesla shares are down 4.5%. But first, oil is hitting its highest level since October, with global supply concerns back in the spotlight. We will get B of A's latest demand forecast. That is next. And as we head to break, here is another check on the markets. The Dow is about 40 points off of its session lows. But as you can see, it is now the laggard. The NASDAQ comp tech stocks were the laggard earlier today, the 10-year above 4.3. The exchange is back right after this.
This is The Exchange on CNBC.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Crude hitting a six-month high today, hovering just below $85 a barrel right now. That is helping push some oil stocks to 52-week highs, though some of those names have paired gains. The Fed rate outlook, geopolitical tensions, supply concerns, all part of this narrative. Joining us now with his outlook on where prices may go from here is Francisco Blanch, commodity and derivatives strategist at Bank of America Securities. Francisco, thank you for being with us today. Energy is a bright spot today. What's being priced in here?
Well, we've seen really a lot of the recent price trends flip on their head. Remember, we came from a very high price in 2022 down to around sub-$70 a barrel the second half of last year. And since then, we've seen stability in prices and, more importantly, OPEC cuts coupled with those increased geopolitical tensions that you referred to starting to firm up the outlook for oil. Plus, we have low inventories and economic activity doesn't seem to be decelerating meaningfully despite the much higher interest rates. So there's really a combination of factors, but things are looking up. And I particularly think the last few days, the tensions in the Middle East have really played a role in pushing prices higher.
Right. So the geopolitical tensions are playing out on the supply side. Talk a little bit about the demand side. I was just talking to Amaru on China's economic recovery. At least the data in recent weeks shows that the economy may be picking back up. Is that priced in yet?
I don't think it's very much priced in. I think the it's not just China, by the way. We're also seeing a recovery in early cycle indicators, whether it's Asian export growth, but also PMIs and other data points suggest that things are picking up. And also remember, geopolitics are not just impacting the supply side, as they normally do, but also they're impacting the demand side. We are now traveling much longer routes around the world, And ships are having to move at faster speeds because now you can't go through the Cape, through Suez or through Panama Canal. So you have to go through the Cape, you have to go to Magellan, and that takes a lot longer. So we're seeing, much longer routes, which at faster speeds, driving up demand considerably. So now we're thinking consumption growth is going to end up being a lot firmer in 2024.
Do you expect that demand to hold up, especially when we're talking China numbers? Are you seeing them like some of the others that this is an uptick, or do you see it as more of a blip?
No, we think it's more sustained. I think it's more sustained, and obviously one of the challenges that the market will likely face and will soon come to it is there's been the expectation of a June rate cut, followed by two more cuts into the second half of the year. So I think we're back into this mode, into this battle royale, as we called it before, between oil and money. We see oil prices fighting the Fed once again, and we'll see. I mean, it's been an interesting battle between OPEC and the Fed,
and
between
the
Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman and Chairman Powell.
But we just spoke at the beginning of the show, right? Especially markets are reflecting some skepticism about that rate cut in June. And I think it was Peter Bookfer at the beginning of the show said that that's about 50-50 right now. If we don't get a June rate cut, what does that mean for the price of oil?
I mean, I think coming into the summer, it doesn't mean a whole lot because we still expect it to be a bumper travel season. We think people are going to be driving a lot and also flying a lot. And supply is tight. Now, coming into the end of next year, into the end of the year, into 2025, things start to loosen up a little bit. We do have a fair amount of supply growth coming out of places like Guyana, Brazil, Canada. We also should see maybe not as fast growth in the U.S., but we still see some growth in the U.S., and that hopefully comes to the rescue. There's also some more refining capacity coming online, particularly in Nigeria, and at some point in Mexico. We're going to also see Middle East refining capacity. But remember, there's been lots of issues in the past few months, including attacks on Russian energy infrastructure with Ukrainian drones that have also reduced the availability of diesel and gasoline fuel. So there's all of stuff happening simultaneously, but again, we think it's more of kind of a 6-month blip that prices can be firm, not so much into 25, where like I said, there's more supply coming, and eventually the energy transition will lead to an erosion of demand trends as well.
Right. So do we ever see Brent back above 90 again? I mean, the last time we saw that was last October. And you talked about how over the last few years, it's been a lot more volatile, but we're seeing this sort of period of relative stability, even with all of the geopolitical tensions and supply that you were talking about. Are you seeing it more stable over the next few years?
We're only a dollar and a half away from 90. So I think it's just literally kind of daily volatility for oil prices that kind of move. So we're around 24% of oil right now. It's about 1.5% daily move. So we could easily break that. But I think medium term we see stability. I think our long term view is that oil is going to be a $60 to $80 a barrel commodity. Long dated Brent prices have been very well anchored at around $70 a barrel, despite all the volatility we've seen in the front. And part of it is this big question mark around the transition. We are supposed to move away from fossil fuels. Will we not? Is a different matter. But for the time being, the market is not going to price a shortage when OPEC's spare capacity is close to 5 million barrels a day. Could that happen medium term if some of the investment falters and demand doesn't come down because we don't really shift away from internal combustion engines? Potentially. But I think it's early to price that in. And for now, we see a stable long-dated oil price at around $70.
Right. And we've certainly seen some of that shift to EVs slow. Francisco Blanch, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Speaking of energy, it could be the story of the summer. According to one chief investment officer on Wall Street, he is looking at three large cap names, including Chevron, which has lagged the broader market so far this year. For the full list, you can scan that QR code right on your screen or go to cnbc.com/propick. Coming up, the Fed's rate cut timeline keeps getting pushed back, but Cleveland Fed President Mester warns that the bigger risk to the economy is cutting too early. We talked a little bit about that. What does it mean for their fight against inflation? We will debate that. And as we head to break, here's a look at some of the names bucking the trend today, hitting new 52-week highs, including Dow Inc., Kroger, Freeport-McMoRan. The Dow drifting back towards session lows, though. The Russell 2000, that's down more than 2%, so small caps really taking it. The exchange is back right after this.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
Welcome back to The Exchange. Let's get to the markets right now and do another check. The Dow is near session lows, down more than 500 points at the almost 500 points at the moment. The Nasdaq Composite made back some of its losses, but still down by more than 1%. And the Russell 2000, taking it the worst, small cap index is down 2.2%. Let's take a look at some individual names. Trump Media shares rebounding from yesterday's 21% drop after the company reported a net loss of $58 million on revenue of just $4 million. Shares are up about 4% since their public debut a week ago, climbing as high as $79 a share before falling. Should come as no surprise. This is incredibly volatile. We've been talking about it a little bit as a new class of meme stocks and certainly acting that way, but is higher today, about 7%. Take a look at Bitcoin as well. It is falling 6%, now trading at around $65,000 after posting its seventh straight monthly gain, down 11% from its all-time high in mid-March. So today, acting perhaps more like risky, speculative tech stock than it is a store of value. We talked about gold, which is higher in the session today. We'll keep an eye on that. Let's get to Tyler Matheson for a CNBC News update.
Deirdre, thank you very much. At least 29 people have died in a massive fire that broke out in a nightclub in an Istanbul was undergoing renovations there. According to city officials in that Turkish town, six people have been detained as part of the investigation into the fire. The exact cause still unclear. Meantime, the Department of Transportation announced a new safety rule requiring the largest freight railroads to have at least two people operating their trains. It comes more than a year after a Norfolk Southern train derailed in East Palestine, Ohio, spilling toxic chemicals. The White House first proposed the rules in 2022. Legislation to address the issue remains stalled in Congress. And pop star Taylor Swift is now a billionaire. Forbes released its 2024 list of the world's billionaires today, and Swift made the cut for the first time with her estimated $1.1 billion fortune from her red-hot music career and real estate portfolio. Bernard Arnault of LVMH, Elon Musk, and Jeff Bezos held the top three spots on that list. I looked hard, Deirdre. I didn't find my name.
It's coming, Tyler. Yeah. Not long. I want to hear about Taylor Swift's real estate portfolio. I would take a segment on that.
That would be good.
I will see you soon, Tyler. See you in a bit. Still ahead, Salesforce is up 50% over the past year, benefiting from the AI boom. Later on, we will speak to the executive who is overseeing all of the company's AI efforts, including today's broader rollout of its Einstein Copilot. And before we go, check out health insurer stocks. They are plunging after the Biden administration did not boost payments for private Medicare plans as much as the industry and investors had hoped for. Humana, which is more dependent on those specific plans, is getting crushed the hardest today, falling to its lowest level in 4 years since 2020. We're back right after this. Welcome back to The Exchange. Markets lower across the board with the Dow the biggest laggard as the street adjusts its rate cut expectations following stronger than expected data. The 10-year yield touching above 4.4 for the first time since November, though it's now below that level. So how should you position? Joining us with her trades is Victoria Green, G Squared Private Wealth CIO, and CNBC contributor Peter Bookvar is back with us for more. And as a fireside chat with San Francisco's Mary Daly gets underway, our Steve Leisman has what it all means for the Fed's next move. Steve, let's kick it off with you.
Deirdre, thanks. You know, after ignoring the bond market for much of the recent rally, stocks look now to be declining in tandem with rising bond yields. So what's bugging the bond market? Well, in addition to hefty supply, it's a weekly thing. There is slowing progress on inflation. Take a look here. Between October and December last year, core PCE fell from 3.4 to 2.9. It's a 44 basis point decline, but it's moved only 16 basis points since December with those firmer January and February reads. Over that time, market-based five-year inflation expectations, after falling to near the Fed's 2% target, have ratcheted back up by 33 basis points to now stand at 2.38. The predictable result? Well, the market's confidence in a June rate cut has not disappeared, but it has weakened. Traders put the probability of that cut at 75% a few weeks ago, now stands around 59%. Cuts are still on the table and solidly in the Fed's and the market's forecast. Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester saying today that she thinks it's appropriate to cut rates later this year. And the inflation picture has not changed much. And that's because she expected inflation progress to slow. It remains likely inflation, she says, will decline to the 2% target over time. Yet she is still not confident enough to cut votes now without a few more months of improving data. All of this comes with improving forecasts for first quarter GDP and growth. But stocks seem to be coming to grips with the idea that declining inflation progress and rising growth prospects undermine that confidence in when those Fed rate cuts might begin. I have a chance to talk about this tomorrow at 8:30 on Squawk with Atlanta Fed President Raphael Bostic.
Yeah, and Deirdre? Steve, I know you're going to go monitor Daily's Fireside Chat. We'll get back to you with some of the headlines from that. But let's get to our guests now. And Peter, what's your reaction to what we've heard so far? And what do you expect to hear from Mary Daly?
Well, Daly's important because she's also a voting member. And there's one thing about Powell is he likes consensus. Mm-hmm. So now we've heard from Bostic. We've heard from Waller. I'm assuming Bowman is a hawk. Powell spoke. So I find it hard to believe that Daly is going to deviate that much from what they have said. Now, also, June's far off. So there's no reason to commit right now to what you want to do in June. So I think she's going to remain very noncommittal with respect to her commentary.
Victoria, let me ask you something that we haven't really discussed. What if rate cuts aren't all that important? Do stocks benefit more from a healthy economy than they do looser policy? Is that being sort of forgotten in today's trade?
A little bit, yeah. And we're going to hit earnings. I think JP Morgan kicks us off, you know, next Friday when financials really get us into Q2. And if the focus is on earnings and we have solid economic growth and we have earnings growth and we can see then, you know, profit expectations rise throughout the year, then absolutely stocks can overcome any cuts or lack thereof. Right. And it has been more of a focus recently. Right now we're in a dead period. Nobody's really reporting. So everything's on economic data. And so it's very, very heightened. Obviously, all eyes on unemployment Friday. And it's a little bit of potentially bad news is good news. If we have some bad unemployment stats, potentially that balances out sticky PCE. And I do think they will be data dependent. Everybody get their Fed bingo cards out, data dependent, patient, weigh the pros and cons. I think we're not going to see a huge policy shift unless we really get continued acceleration of inflation. And that deflationary goods trend is one that I'm watching. We've seen that really, really help with inflation. But now we've got commodities on the rise. So we got to make sure we're kind of watching the good side. But I like that. ISM, PMI, in expansionary territory. China data wasn't horrible. Some of that stuff is there is a lot to like on the economic front for stocks that are in the business of selling things.
Right. And even on the earnings front, I mean, it was the Magnificent Seven that carried the broader markets all of last year. But we've certainly seen more breadth this year. I saw a chart that showed that the S&P 500 X the Magnificent Seven is actually, we're looking for better earnings out of them than the biggest mega caps themselves. What does that mean for the rally?
Well, sir, I think it's fantastic to broaden out. I think that was always a problem. We were so concentrated. And I think right now the Magnificent Seven is breaking up, kind of like the Beagles back in the day. It may not exist anymore when we're seeing the struggle. Specifically today, you know, with the Tesla issues, which is very much concentrated on EVs and vehicles. And so it's great. I think there's a lot of profit possibilities. I think the valuations aren't quite as stretched as everything else. I think if you look around, the value trade, the cyclical trade, energy, industrials, financials, those are working a little bit. You know, we always have risks that could pop up. Will CRE come back into play? Will regional banks be an issue? Mm-hmm. Will we suddenly care about the debt levels? None of that has mattered yet. Right. If a company can produce earnings, if the company can raise expectations, especially if the company says, hey, we think we can make a little bit more money, I think that's great. The one area I think is going to struggle, which you're seeing today, is small caps. Small caps tend to be more levered. They tend to, you know, if they're going to have to refinance at higher rates, you know, that's a drag on a lot of them. And that could be an issue. And you're seeing that play out with the Russell 2000 today.
Yeah, that's right. It is the laggard. And by the way, that you could argue that the mega caps are becoming more like the Beatles because they're the Fab Four now, right? But that aside, Peter, Victoria brought up sort of these risk factors that the market have largely ignored over the last few weeks and months. We saw a great first quarter. Any of those things that she listed worry you most?
Well, as I said earlier, the economy is not strong. There are pockets of strength, but there's also pockets of weakness. I mean, you have the auto sales, which were coming in today. They're still running well below where they were pre-COVID. You have the pace of existing home transactions near a 30-year low. You have lower-end consumer that is essentially in its own personal recession, whereas higher-end consumers are doing better. You have global trade that's sort of based on what we've seen in the economies in Europe, in Asia. Manufacturing, yes, we're beginning to see some embers of hope, which I hope will continue, but it's still in a contraction when you look at it globally. So it is not an easy picture to really glean, and it's not strong. There are pockets of strength, and there are certainly pockets of weakness here. And I think that that's and what the Fed is going to do is obviously going to complicate this. I think higher for longer is a real thing. And while we throw it out here in the financial markets, it really matters if you're a borrower. If you have debt coming due this year on a loan that was priced pre-2022, you're in trouble if you don't have more equity or you don't have free cash flow.
Right.
Because that debt is repricing from probably 3 to 8. So there's still a lot of pain to be had from interest rates staying high for a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm. Peter Brookfire, you kind of came full circle there. So thank you. We'll let you go now. Victoria, thanks for being with us as well. Still ahead, Tesla is one of the biggest drags on the S&P today, posting a big miss on Q1 deliveries. We will dig into those numbers, what's next, and how the competition is faring. That's coming up. Take a look at Tesla shares. They are down sharply after a rare year-over-year drop in deliveries. Philibeau has all the details. Phil, Musk warned us of notably slower growth, but this was slower than anyone had expected.
Way slower than what people were expecting, Deirdre, and a number of factors in the first quarter. With the issues with production out of the Gigafactory in Berlin, China has become a much more competitive and a slower EV market than what we've seen in the past. So when you look at the total number of deliveries for Tesla in the first quarter, coming in at just under 387,000 vehicles, 70,000 fewer than the analysts were expecting in terms of a consensus, and down 8.5% compared to the first quarter of last year. The question now, what happens with full year deliveries? At this pace, they come in at about 1.5, 1.6 million. They delivered 1.8 million last year. By the way, Tesla has yet to give official guidance in terms of what it expects to deliver for the full year. Other auto sales that we got today in terms of the first quarter, Rivian Q1 deliveries, 13,588 vehicles, roughly in line with expectations. And then you've got the three Asian automakers who are big into hybrids, and they are reaping the rewards of it, at least with Toyota and Honda. Toyota up 20.3% in the first quarter. Honda, 17.3%. There you see Hyundai, record first quarter sales there. And finally, General Motors, Q1 sales declining 1.5%. Keep in mind, there was a big drop in fleet sales in the first quarter, down about 22%. That's one reason why the sales overall were down 1.5%, with EV sales coming in at just under 16,000. That's important because, Deirdre, they're ramping up into the Ultium battery cell production. That's going to be crucial to EV sales this year. Oh, and one other note, Nissan up 7.5% in the first quarter.
Philibeau, thanks very much for breaking that down for us. Coming up, Salesforce slightly lower today, but up more than 14% so far this year. We're going to talk to the CEO of its AI division about how they're expanding those capabilities. That's next.
We'll be right back.
equities still near session lows, and we had San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly speaking about the economy in a fireside chat. Let's get over to Steve Leisman with the headline. Steve.
Hey, Deirdre. San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly sort of joining the chorus of Fed folks being in no hurry to cut rates. She says inflation is coming down, but it's bumpy and slow. There's no urgency to adjust the rate right now. Three cuts she calls a reasonable baseline, but not a promise. Says the Fed has to be prepared if inflation proves to be sticky. Therefore, standing Pat Daly says is the right policy for the moment. Economy is improving. In fact, she calls it solid, but says there's a path where interest rates start to adjust this year, just not there yet. There's a real risk, she says, of cutting rates too soon, really echoing what we've heard from other folks, including Waller, including Mester this morning. If we lock inflation in at this level, she says, she calls it a toxic tax. Finally, she says, steady in the boat is the right mantra for now, Deirdre.
As you said, Steve, kind of joining the chorus, and we're not seeing much of a reaction in markets at the moment. Thank you for that. Meanwhile, shares of Microsoft, sure, they are down about 1% today as the prospect of higher rates for longer pressures tech. It's one of the biggest drags on the NASDAQ 100, along with Broadcom, NVIDIA, and AMD. Microsoft announced yesterday that it plans to split up its Teams and Office bundles following scrutiny from European regulators. Analysts at Mizuho say the move will be incrementally positive for Zoom, which makes a rival video product. The firm also saying Salesforce-owned Slack could see a boost from the breakup. And speaking of Salesforce, the company revealing today that it is expanding its Einstein Copilot capabilities to its Tableau platform, and that the AI tech will be widely available in the next few weeks. For more on that launch, let's bring in the CEO of Salesforce AI, Clara Shai. Clara, great to see you. I'm sorry we can't be in person in San Francisco this time. What are you seeing? I mean, we're certainly seeing this pullback in some of the tech names, some of the AI winners today. But when you look at your customers and what they're using Einstein Copilot and these generative AI tools for, do you think that spending is going to only increase in these products in the year ahead?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It's the customer response to our AI products and platform has been tremendous, whether it's Slack AI or all the service users and sales teams and marketers and commerce managers using Einstein. We're really seeing tremendous productivity gains. And that's really what's inspiring customers to go from pilot to production this year. And so I think it all comes down to business outcomes, and customers are willing to spend where they see a return.
Are they spending, is it additional spend on Einstein Copilot, or are you offering it to them as part of their existing package right now? How are you guys monetizing?
So we've heard a lot of different types of requests from customers, and we're addressing that demand really through two ways. One is we have a new Einstein 1 edition for sales and service and for our industries that allows our customers to get everything that they love from Salesforce, including Einstein AI, Data Cloud, Slack, other features and functions, all packaged together. And then for those customers who want to specifically purchase AI, we have add-on seats, Einstein for service, Einstein for sales, Einstein for platform that customers can easily buy.
Obviously, Salesforce serves a wide range of industries. Which industries are you seeing is sort of picking up quickly to the generative AI tools?
You know, the amazing thing, Deirdre, is that we're seeing it across every industry. You know, financial services companies, from banks and wealth management firms, mortgage, insurance, health and life sciences, pharma companies, public sector. It's really demand across the board. And I think it speaks to the power and potential of bringing AI and data into every organization.
And how is that affecting their efficiency? Earlier on in the show, we were talking about the upcoming earnings season and how we're going to see more companies outside of the mega caps sort of see better earnings. The breadth of this rally and the earnings trend is going to broaden out. Do you see on your side this helping efficiencies and productivities at companies?
Absolutely. I mean, I think when you bring data in and unlock kind of previous silos and trap data in every company, it really unlocks tremendous possibilities. And so we look at service representatives who are now able to answer questions much more quickly because the AI is automating the drudgery and the mundane work of having to look up knowledge articles. And now customers like Wonolo and Gucci and ADP are seeing faster resolution times, and then customer satisfaction scores go up.
How is that impacting efficiency and productivity at Salesforce itself? I remember, I think it was a few years ago, activist investors were demanding more profitability, and you guys have actually come some ways of doing that. What's the opportunity for generative AI to further improve margins?
You know, one of the things that I've always appreciated most about Salesforce is how much we adapt our own products. So all of our sellers are using Salesforce every day. Same with our customer support, customer success team. And so our own teams have been the very first to test out, give feedback on, and adapt everything from Einstein GPT for sales, so account summaries, generating emails to customers, yeah. As well as on the service side, service reply recommendations and case summaries, et cetera.
Clara, thanks for being with us. It's good to see you. I'll see you back in the Bay Area, I'm sure.
Likewise.
Soon. Clara Shai. And Clara is one of CNBC's inaugural changemakers. There's still time to register. These are women transforming businesses. There's an event in New York City on April 18th. To request an invite, you can scan the QR code on the screen or go to cnbcevents.com/changemakers. That does it for The Exchange. I will join Tyler Matheson for Power Lunch after this quick break. Stay with us.
You've been listening to The Exchange. Make sure you're subscribed to get each episode every day, same time, same place.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.